listening to Angophora Arts, a podcast about reading
and writing
for people who love books.
This episode was recorded on Gadigal and Bidjigal lands of the Eora Nation.
Hello, book world, and welcome to the Angophora Arts podcast. My name is Sarah Sasson. I'm a Sydney-based author, doctor, and researcher, and I'll be your host. Every week, we'll be chatting to local authors and other members of the literary community. So let's see who we'll be catching up with this week. Miranda Nation is an award-winning writer and director. Miranda's original six-part series as creator, writer, and executive producer, playing Gracie Darling, premiered on Paramount Plus in 2025. And in the same year, her debut novel, New Skin, was published by Allen & Unwin. Hello and welcome, Miranda, to the Angophora Arts podcast.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
It's wonderful to chat today. How's your week been going? Has it been filled with many book-related things, or has it been a less bookish time?
Oh, look, overall, it's been, I think, a challenging week for a few people. You know, lots of big emotions with the Bondi shooting on the weekend. Obviously, you know, everyone feeling very strongly about that. But then in contrast, a lot of beautiful Christmassy, end of year, joyful things. So it's, you know, it's been holding all that in head and heart at the same time has been challenging. But bookishly, I've been writing and buying books for Christmas presents.
Nice. And the reading best presents. Yeah, no, it has been a very big week here in Sydney as well. We're not far from where it all happened. And I think everyone's still just a little bit in shock and reverberating. But yeah, I echo your sentiments. There's been some amazing stories of courage and bravery in amongst it all as well. Yeah. So I think Australians often look around the world and see what we don't want to become. And I think our local communities tend to be quite strong. And I think if any good comes of this, hopefully it will be, you know, that resolve to take care of each other and be tolerant and, you know, and the gun, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the gun laws as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
So Miranda, you've worked as an actor, a writer for film and television, executive producer and director. So when did you decide to write a novel? And what were some of the first ideas that New Skin was built around?
So back many years ago, I had studied overseas and I came back and I was exploring my voice and transitioning from acting into more of a writing, directing role. But it was still very new and I was very unsure of myself. Am I a writer, et cetera? And a friend of mine said, well, you've always written. You can write. Why don't you just write? And so I set myself a challenge. I thought I'd write a novel. Now, this is a very long time ago and it was never published, but it was the seed that later became New Skin. I wrote a novel. I showed it to a few people, put it away. It was in a way partly Leah's story. She was the protagonist and it was about a young woman quitting med, finding her way into the arts, grappling with self-doubt. Anyway, it was always sitting there in the drawer and I thought, then I moved more into writing for film and TV and directing, but I always thought there was perhaps something interesting in it to revisit.
So you finished it was a full-length novel, that first piece.
Yes.
And did you query it? Did you show it to people or was it something you kind of wrote more for yourself?
I did a little. I managed to get an agent and she, I think, showed it to a few people, but I was very ignorant of how the whole industry worked. Mm. I suppose at that stage I could have done more work on it and kept shopping it around, but I kind of just thought, oh, no, I think I probably got one rejection and thought, all right, that's the end of that.
Oh, the good old days.
Put it away.
So in New Skin, we follow the relationship of Leah and Alex, who meet in a Melbourne medical school in the 1990s. Their relationship begins in the heady throes of drug and alcohol-laden parties with a powerful physical attraction. And what follows is a growing emotional bond that oscillates over decades between being together and apart, between a constructive and deconstructive relationship. Part of the central tension of the story is the uncertainty around whether this young love is something that will be sustaining or come to a necessary end. So my question is, did Alex, the sort of male counterpart to Leah, was he in your first book or was he a
He
new
was, but
character?
he was like a small character, a love interest. And then during COVID, actually, was when I actually took it out and started looking at it again. And I was really struck at that time, like I think a lot of us were, by the way that health workers were absolutely at the front line of this unfolding crisis. So many unknowns, so much fear and insecurity. And I have a great respect for the medical profession and everyone in, that works in health. And I suppose my decision many years ago to quit med and pursue a career in the arts, I've grappled with that decision, not necessarily in a sense of I regret that choice, but life in the arts is often unpredictable and requires a fair bit of self-belief. Why am I doing this? And so, at times I had looked at, oh, what it might have been like had I taken that other path. To simplify it, chosen med and gone on and become a doctor, what would that life look like? So I kind of started imagining using that point in my life as a jumping off point for inspiration of a decision of whether to pursue the arts or pursue medicine. And then I realized I really wanted to, rather than just exploring Leah's story, I wanted to have this dual perspective. So I took that smaller character of Alex and fleshed him out and imagined him into the other protagonist. And in some ways it was like imagining this divergence of my pathway and
Through the two
through
characters,
the
one.
two characters. Yeah. So I mean, it is a love story at its heart, but I think it's also very much about exploring the choices we make when we're young and finding self-acceptance in whatever pathway you choose.
That's interesting. I mean, you think about being a healthcare worker or a doctor or working in the arts. I mean, they're both really challenging careers and probably for totally different reasons. But I imagine during the COVID-19 pandemic, was that clarifying for you? Were you kind of like, oh, I'm glad I'm not
I was more
out
like,
there?
oh, I should be doing something useful with my life. I should be out there doing something rather than just, what can seem sometimes like a selfish choice. I mean, I do not for any moment doubt that we need art in our lives and that we need stories, but sometimes it's hard to justify whether the world needs your stories, whether it's the right choice for you. So
We definitely do. One of my core memories from the pandemic. Both my husband and I worked, working in the public hospitals, and it was just so strange. I remember driving, everyone was in lockdown and at home and, trying to homeschool and juggle kids and work commitments. And I remember driving to the hospital and no one was on the road except like a few cars and then all the ambulances going in various directions. And then even the hospital where I worked at, it was so strange because, like the florist wasn't open, the chemist wasn't open, like everything, or the food services weren't open. So it's like and it really felt like working like in a military base kind of hospital, because it was kind of like a hospital without all, like no visitors or anything. It was
Just
literally
stripped
just
back to the
the
essential.
total essentials. Well, it's already pretty stripped back, but it was even more stripped back. But then I also remember coming home in the evenings and just to survive. I remember Jimmy Rees, the comedian, and he did such funny skits about the vaccine. And we used to put that on and just laugh. And I think it was almost like, therapy for us. Because we
Absolutely.
needed art as well in our lives to survive what we were going through. And yeah, so I think, I strongly believe that writing and art saves lives as well, just in a totally different, in a different mechanism. But yeah, I think we all, it's interesting when you're young. We all have sliding doors moments and what if. And actually, that's interesting. I didn't pick up on Leah and Alex both being, that could have been your sliding doors moments. So in New Skin, there's this exploration of young adulthood, early relationships, experimentation, and risk taking. And it's interesting because my novel Tidelines is also in that kind of late adolescence, early adult period. So when you're writing the novel, did you revisit your favorite parts of being young and what they were? And then in contrast, what are the aspects of adolescence and young adulthood that you absolutely do not miss at all?
Yes, I mean, it's such a time of first, isn't it? The first love, leaving home, discovering new art, literature, film, all these influences, music, experimenting with sex, drugs, alcohol. I hope I capture that kind of excitement and there's a certain hedonism, the drama and the passion, everything feels unknown and full of potential. even though both characters do struggle with mental health issues, I hope I capture that sense of thrill and excitement as well and passion. Having said that, I don't miss that drama and passion. The uncertainty, the self-doubt, the self-excoriation, I think all of that I can quite happily leave in that time.
It is. It's such an exciting time. And yeah, when you sort of go back and revisit, as you said, all that time of first and anything seems possible. I remember that feeling of going out on the weekend. It's like anything could happen tonight. But also, when I was writing, I realized it's a time like you've got so much drive and passion towards things. But in other ways, you're very curtailed. You have all this time, but often you don't have any money or like the mechanism to get there. There's things you want to do, but you don't quite know how to get there. Or yeah, so it can be frustrating and a little bit scary. Like you're exploring, pushing boundaries, you're doing things for the first time, you're trying to keep up with other people, or you're drawn to people and you don't know why. But yeah, it's funny having my own kids now, and I often think, oh, it's so different for kids today. They've got mobile phones and the internet. But if you walk down to the coast where we live, on any public holiday, the game is always who can climb to the highest rock and jump off. And then that was exactly the same game we played when we were young. It's like certain thing that like who's going to go the highest and who's going to jump out. And
Thrill-seeking
it's
behavior.
yeah, and it's just this classic. It's yeah, it's almost like a rite of passage again. And then I look at them and I go, well, I guess some things don't change. There's everyone's still playing that same game. So I was lucky enough to join you at the Nu Skin book launch in Sydney, and we spoke about Helen Garner being one of your influences. What is it about Garner's writing that inspires you, and were there particular works by her or others that informed your writing of New Skin?
I've always found Helen's work really influential. I read Monkey Grip when I was probably about 20. It really resonated with me, and it was probably a key influence in that early draft of what then became Nu Skin. I think, well, so many reasons. I mean, I love how she manages to make things both deeply personal but also universal. And the way her prose is really elegant and poetic, but also incredibly accessible. Her observation of detail and finding beauty in the everyday. I think she's, I mean, she's got this really quiet wisdom. There's the sort of social relevance in her writing. So, yeah, really inspired by her works. As I said, Monkey Grip, The Diaries, The First Stone, The Season more recently.
I love
More
the
so than
season.
the true crime stuff, even though I love that stuff as well. Someone else who was influential was Drusilla Majeska. I think a similar kind of sensitivity, sensibility.
Yeah, I'm always in awe of people who can kind of like she's obviously writing from her own life, but then has this great self-awareness of how, sharing her stories or where it sort of sits in the bigger picture, to write of the personal, but then in a way, as you said, it's so accessible and resonates so broadly. Did you reread Monkey Grip while you're writing New Skin, or have you, is
Not
it?
while I was writing it, but I have read it again since reading it in my early 20s. I just can't remember when exactly.
Yeah, I only read it relatively recently, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. But then there were such strong references. Like, what's the she's always consulting some special text, is it? I had to look up. It's like
Oh, I've forgotten that
oh
now.
yeah, it's something about, I don't know, some kind of spiritual text. I always had to look up what that was. There were certain very sort of like 70s
Like the I
references.
Ching or something.
Something like that, that I had to ask people what that was. And the season more recently, yeah, really resonated with me. I've got a young boy. He doesn't play AFL, but he plays soccer. But yeah, I loved how she wrote. It was so interesting that she was writing, she was 80, and just that intoxication of being around young people playing sport and how vital they are. And yeah, so beautiful. And then everything kind of sport teaches us, and often arts and the sport, especially in Australia, for reasons I don't completely understand, they're kind of pitted against each other. Do you know what I mean? Like sport is over here, and then the arts are over here. But I really liked how she, celebrated,
Wove them together.
yeah, then the camaraderie and the teamwork that comes with sport. It's not just all bad tribalism stuff. Yeah, there's really beautiful things that come out of sport as well. So over what years did you write this novel? Were you writing through COVID?
I think I started it in 2021, or was it 2020? It was about 6 months that I bashed out the first draft.
That's quick. That's really
Yeah.
quick.
Thanks to my wonderful partner who took on some primary carer duties to allow me to write. I think I was in a gap between working on various screenplay projects. And then I showed it. I probably spent a bit of time refining that. Then I showed it to a few trusted people. Jane Novak, who wasn't my agent yet, but is now, very kindly read it and gave some really valuable feedback.
So how did you meet Jane, or was that through a mutual connection?
Yes, well, I have an agent in the film and TV world, and she has some other clients that are also with Jane. So she made the introduction. But I also asked a friend of mine who's an editor just about the process, because really I had no idea how it works. I'm quite attuned now to the film and TV world, but it's quite different, the literary world. And she mentioned that some of the work that used to be done in-house, the editing that used to be done in-house, now tends to, there's not enough budget for it. And she suggested that a lot of writers now use external editors, manuscript editors. So that's what I did with this first draft. I worked with a wonderful woman called Anna Thwaites, who did a full manuscript assessment for me, and again had some really great insights and feedback. So then, with her notes and Jane's notes and some notes from other trusted friends and colleagues, I did a second draft. And really, I can't remember the time frames of this, especially because it was all intertwined with COVID and post-COVID, which is such a blur anyway. But then Jane very generously read the second draft and felt that it had greatly improved and took it on. And then she started approaching publishers, and Jane Palfreyman at Allen and Unwin chose to publish it, which was extremely exciting.
Actually quite, so you didn't submit to any unpublished manuscripts awards, or you didn't put it in
No.
any open
In hindsight, that would
call-outs.
have been a good idea, but I didn't even
No, but
really
you've
know
had a
about these
very,
opportunities.
quite a direct path, and a quite an excellent path. I mean, yeah, amazing. I mean, Jane's obviously one of the most well-respected and connected agents around, so amazing to have that. Yeah, I feel, and it's funny because I would have thought you would kind of have some insight, more insight into the literary world, but obviously because you write for TV and film, but obviously
Yeah,
they're quite
very
different.
different actually. And I mean, now I've spoken to lots of different authors, and I've heard many different pathways and people who have gone through those unpublished manuscript pathways. I mean, I did know about some of them, and I think with that very early iteration, I might have submitted it to one or two of those awards or those pathways. But yes, I'm still learning. It's all a learning process.
I think what I've learned from talking to so many writers is, yeah, there isn't really one beaten track. Everyone's story is so different, but I think the common theme is really not giving up. And yeah, so lots of people obviously submit to competitions and awards and pitch days, but I think, yeah, just putting, when once it's ready, once it's sort of at a stage where it's ready to be created, I think just putting it out there, putting it, because it just takes one or two people to sort of pick it up and
Yes.
connect with it. And then, but a lot of the conversations, and we don't see as the writers, there's still a mystery
Yes.
shrouding the industry, because I think we're not in a lot of, as the writer, we don't get to see what goes on the other side. But obviously, the agents and the publishers talk all the time, but it's not that visible to the artists trying to put their work out. But yeah, I think the common theme is that if you believe in your work and you just keep putting it out there, eventually, like a door opens
Well,
a crack
there's
if you're
all those
lucky.
stories, aren't there, of, people that just kept persisting and then had these bestsellers that were rejected by numerous publishers before they finally found their home.
So your original six-part series as creator, writer, and EP is called Playing Gracie Darling, and that debuted also this year on Paramount
Yes.
Plus in 2025. So it's been
Been a big year.
a massive year. How different is writing for the screen versus writing for the page?
The process is really different, particularly in TV. It's a really collaborative process. So, for example, with the TV show, I took a pitch to, or my agent took it to the producers. It was like a 10-page story document with the world and the inspiration and the story outline, in quite a bit of detail, and the characters, but I hadn't written it a script yet. And then from that point, when the producers optioned it, I was writing with them essentially. So you've constantly got notes and meetings and feedback. It's extremely collaborative and pretty fast in television. So that's something that was a big shock to me when I was working on the editing process of the novel, was that actually there wasn't as much input. You know, that authorial voice, I guess, is left alone to a degree. Someone might give you feedback, but you don't have to take those notes. You can choose whether you want to take on those notes. Whereas in TV and I guess in film as well, often the vested interests mean that there's
You
not so
have to
much
kind
choice
of
as to whether you take the note on or not because, yeah, you want to get the show made.
And so how many writers in something like Playing Gracie Darling, how many writers would be on the team?
Look, it depends. With Playing Gracie Darling, it was just me and one other. So I wrote 4 episodes and Anya wrote 2. But prior to the actual writing of the scripts, you do writers' rooms. First of all, a brainstorming room and then plotting rooms. And then you might have, we never had more than 3 writers in the room, but that is just such a great experience. You know, you get to sit in a room for a week or however long it is with these other brilliant minds,
Just
or
bouncing
with
ideas, it
brilliant minds, I should
sounds.
say. Not saying my mind is brilliant, but
Of course
with
it
some
is.
brilliant minds. And bounce around the idea and come up with, you know, so all these different scenarios that might work, and then you gradually hone in and plot it. And so, you know, there's a lot of input and collaboration before you go away and write the script.
Yeah, that does sound like such an amazing experience. It's sort of on my bucket list to try and get into a writer's room at some point. But just that idea of, because often, yeah, you've got an idea or something, but it can always be improved on, and then to sit around other people and just sort of spark and flint ideas
Absolutely.
of each other's, and often it'll be something surprising. Because in writing, often you need that kind of
Well, that's
surprise,
it.
something coming from
And
left field, and you can't quite figure out what it is on your
yes, and
own.
the amount of time you spend as an author having those conversations with yourself, or, you know, maybe with your partner or your trusted person. But I mean, there's something beautiful as well about just writing solo and being left to explore that and find your way. But sometimes, you know, the time that could be saved by just having that writer's room and going, what about this? Oh, actually, and, you know, exploring it in that forum rather than as a solitary writer having to go down that path and then go, oh, no, that didn't work, and rip that all up and, you know,
It's
start
nice to hear
over.
that it's nice to hear that you enjoy both. I guess, yeah, when I went to a Writing New South Wales course, and then we formed like a writers group, but I think like writers groups is kind of trying to emulate what happens in the
Ah,
writers' room,
interesting.
but it's a little bit different because everyone tries to help you, but I guess, yeah, ultimately you're the most invested, and often you have like this vision of what the book is, and like you say, other people give you advice that you either want to take or not. But there is something nice about, I always felt, oh, it's nice to have my book in a communal space. Like it felt, after grappling with it so long as a solo endeavor, it's nice to put it in a space that's communal. And also to see, often it was surprising people's reactions to something that you hadn't anticipated at all. Like the way a scene is read or a character is read, someone can have quite a strong reaction. And you hadn't intended that at all. And so that's important to get that feedback
That's a
on
really
as
good
well.
idea, actually. And I should say, with writing for TV or film, you know, there does still need to be that leadership and the person that ultimately has the vision that is bringing all the different disparate ideas together and making them cohere. But certainly, it is a more collaborative process all the way through.
And also, I think the danger, what I was always really scared of, is you don't want to have like book by committee, or like everyone puts in their
Yes,
two cents, and then you've got
that's
a mixture of like,
it.
oh, this person likes a bit of romance, this person likes a bit of crime, this person likes a little bit of navel-gazing literary. So you could really confuse a text. So I think that's why the sort of authorial voice is very important, to sort of maintain that voice and
And probably in
vision.
any medium, you know, you need to have singular vision at the same time as being able to take on valuable feedback and test things and what people's reactions and how they might read it.
And so, is what's 2026 looking like for you? Is it going to be as massive as 2025? Have you got
I doubt
new
it.
screen projects you're working on? And do you have inklings about what a next book might be about? What's 2026 looking like for you?
Oh, look, it's a bit unknown actually. There's some screen projects which might happen or might not. I have recently finished a draft of a new novel, so I'm tentatively excited about
Ooh, you've
that.
been busy. Can you tell us
Yes.
anything about that? What it's about?
Well, I'm always very superstitious about talking about things that are so new, but it's quite different to New Skin. It's centered around female friendship and a buried secret that comes to light and sort of threatens friendships and relationships. So Yeah.
Sounds good.
We'll see.
We'll stay tuned on that. Okay, well, we're coming to the end of our time. So we usually finish with some book
Oh,
recommendations. So
yes.
can you tell us about a book you're reading now or anything else you read recently that you would recommend to listeners?
I just finished Arundhati Roy's Mother Mary Come to Me,
Oh, yes.
which I loved. I've always loved her writing. Probably similar reasons that I love Helen's
Is that
writing.
memoir? Is that
It's
memoir?
memoir and a lot about her relationship with her mother, but it also touches on her whole career. And yeah, fascinating. I hadn't known that she also started in film. She wrote screenplays. She even acted in some films in the very early days.
Oh, wow.
And
And
but
what
yeah,
was her relationship like with her mother, was it?
very tumultuous, tortured even, you might say. Her mother was this incredible woman who started up a school in Kerala and, making education available to girls and women and people from situations that might not normally be able to access education. And I think the school, as far as I know, the school's still going and it's this amazing institution. But her relationship with her own daughter was always very critical and fractured. So it's a really interesting
Yeah, I did wonder when I
book.
read the title. I was I've been reading a bit about that. So, oh, it's a good recommendation. I'll put that in the notes. And any other books you've read?
I've just started Brave New Wild, which is another non-fiction. Is that what it's called? Richard King. It's actually a bit terrifying. It's all about climate change and technology and how we're kind of moving into an era of almost re-engineering nature, like as we kind of go past the tipping point now for limiting warming, that some of the rather than relying on technology like renewables, which is still obviously technology, we're starting to look to things like cloud seeding and other forms of technological fixes that are almost about re-engineering nature,
Oh, okay.
bending nature further to our will rather than trying to find ways to modify
Reduce
our relationships
behavior.
with nature. Yes. So
So is that non-fiction as well?
that is
Is
also
it?
non-fiction. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, that does sound terrifying.
Yeah. But I have also got a whole list of holiday reading that is not quite as
Intersperse,
challenging.
intersperse. I'm always fascinated by what people read. Well, we'll put those links in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We will eagerly await news of your
Thank
next
you.
creative projects
What
coming
about you?
up.
What does 2026 have in store for
Yes,
you?
no, good question. Well, I was supposed to finish my novel draft this year, but the podcast has, it took a lot of my time and energy. So my plan is to finish this season of the podcast and then, really focus on the
Fantastic.
novel two in 2026. So I do have the beginning of it and I know what it's
And where it's
about.
going. Well, that's
But I kind of
good.
need to, and I'm finding more and more. Well, it's interesting how you talked about COVID. So many writers found that really, it was a productive time for them. And a lot of it was about reducing options and reducing all the noise of life. And so I'm thinking very much about how to sort of unplug myself a little bit from all the
But you still
distractions.
work part-time
I'm
as
still
a
working,
doctor?
so I work full time.
Oh, full-time.
Part time as a doctor at the hospital and part time at
Yes.
the university as a researcher.
Yeah, so that
And
doesn't leave a lot of time
no,
in the
I
day,
know,
especially with kids.
exactly. Even kids, exactly. So it's about carving out those niches. But yeah, that's how I wrote my first book when my, I wrote it nearly when I was on maternity leave, crazily. But it's a hard way to write a book. Thin time
Is.
is
I'll
what
catch up
Charlotte
to
Wood
you. I mean,
calls
I
it.
have
You
time when I'm not writing, on a screenplay. I have time during daytimes when the kids are at
Yeah.
school to, write, which,
Exactly. And it's nice to use your brain when it's awake and happy. I'm often writing when I'm very tired, which I find useful because I'm a little bit disinhibited and I
It
don't
can be very
the
freeing late at night. You kind
my
of can write
self-critic.
some stuff that you can then bring into shape later, but because you're like, oh, let's see
Totally.
where that goes.
Yeah, if I'm really awake and alert, often I have, a lot of self-critical talk, but late at night, you're almost semi-delirious with tiredness. The words just flow. And sometimes I write stuff and then the next day I'm like, oh, did I write? I don't even, it's so fresh. Yeah, but for me, the first draft is like blood from a stone. I love editing. Once I've got words on a
Yes.
page, I love
the polish and the all that, but it's that first draft is
Oh
like
yeah,
really
just
painful for
getting
me.
anything out on the page is, you
Oh,
know, is such
I
hard work, isn't
yeah,
it?
yeah.
Tracking
So
through wet cement, you know, and then you're like, oh, after that you can go back and you can refine endlessly, but it's getting that
exactly.
first.
So the first draft is, yeah, it's gonna be painful, but that's gonna be my year, and then I'm, yeah, looking forward to having words on the page, because then you've got something to deal with.
Yes. This is a
All
relief.
right. Well, I wish us both
Okay.
luck. Thanks again for
Yes.
taking the time, and
No, thank
enjoy
you for
your
having me.
holidays.
You too.
Thank you so much.